Republican State Representative Joel Clayfish and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett are teaming up on a bill that would impose a statewide standard that would regulate where sex offenders could live in Wisconsin. It would supersede local housing ordinances, and it would contain a return-to-sender component, where the offender would be returned to the community where the crime was committed. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, March 11th. We will talk with a professor of criminal justice about the problem that is being seen in finding housing for sex offenders once released from prison, and this proposed solution. Would statewide standards be a good idea or not? Would this return to sender component be a good idea or not? What questions do you have? What experiences have you had with this issue? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Stan Stojkovic, a dean and professor of criminal justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. One of his professional interests is the management of sex offenders in communities. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, before we go into the specifics of this law, let's talk a little bit about the problem. Apparently, there are many communities that have different ordinances in place that restrict where a sex offender can live. Some communities are trying to ban serious sex offenders from even moving to their towns. This is a problem.
Yes, it is. It's a problem because you don't get any consistency, and there is a huge variation in, you know, what's a sex offender? What do you mean by that? How long can they be banned from the community? Is it a lifetime ban? Is it a temporary ban? Many communities across Wisconsin, but also across the country, have wrestled with this issue. The fundamental premise has always been that if out of sight, out of mind. And in fact, the evidence suggests the exact opposite. So, this idea of moving toward a state solution may be, and I want to underscore the word may be a good idea as we go forward.
Yeah, and so for the most part, even though there's a patchwork of local ordinances, a community might say, if a sex offender moves to our community or is placed in our community, the housing has to be a certain distance away from schools or parks or places where children congregate.
Yeah, that's correct. And in fact, at one level, on an intuitive level, that seems to make some sense, but the empirical evidence doesn't suggest that that does anything.
What do you mean?
Well, in the sense that those bans, 1,000 feet, usually that's been the standard that many communities have used. You can't live within 1,000 feet of a school or a nursing home or a senior center or all these places. And when you start to get into particularly densely populated areas, that ban has no meaning because you can't fulfill the ban. And the evidence is that sex offending, once back in the community, let's say that you had done some prison time and you come back into the community, the recidivism rates of those people with those bans doesn't really make a difference. It doesn't do anything to protect society or the community. It's a hope more than any kind of hard fact that type of ban will do anything in the community. And we don't have any evidence that it does anything to make communities safer. So there are things that you can do, but that's not one of them.
Well, let's go into the definition of sex offender. As you mentioned, that's an issue, too. Peter on Facebook says part of the problem is that sex offender is a generic term that describes a variety of different problem behaviors which need different solutions. Offenders who target children should be treated differently from offenders who target adults and from offenders who were caught urinating publicly while drunk. Another part of the problem is that basically nobody wants these people to live anywhere near us, but as a society, we are not willing to execute them. Well, what is... how are you labeled a sex offender?
Well, it's a broad rubric. It could be anything from, you know, a 19-year-old young man having sex with a 17-year-old girlfriend. In fact, in many states, it is just that. That's the largest single sex offending category. And so for most people's minds, when they think of sex offender, they think of a person in the bushes. They think of a stranger interaction, someone preying on children. Clearly, that's a sex offender, too. But that latter description is only about 3 to 5% of the sex offending population. So the sex offending population, it's a broad rubric. So the email is correct. You need to have differential responses. And the ones that pose the greatest threat to you, you don't want them farther away. You don't want them hidden. You want those people closer to you. So you want to be able to watch them, all right? Those that pose that, those 3 to 5% that pose the greatest risk to you. So that's part of the problem is definition. What are we talking about when we say sex offender? Many of these ordinances are written in local communities with a broad definition that includes a whole spectrum of behaviors, and that seems to make no sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that email is exactly right. Now, and executing them, that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
But the idea of doing something variable makes some sense, given the sex offender is that broad rubric or that broad definition.
And we're not going to get into a debate over capital punishment, but I think maybe what he's referring to some extent, is the concern many have that sex offenders who are pedophiles who go after children cannot be rehabilitated is the thought. Is this true?
That's not true either. The evidence seems to suggest that there are certain types of strategies with certain types of offenders or types of sex offenders. Again, you have to, devil's in the details. You have to get complex in responding to this, and that there are treatment modalities that seem to work better with certain offenders than with other offenders. Now, the larger issue is, you know, we don't want them around here. Well, that's just not reality. Sex offenders, like all different types of offenders, are everywhere in the community. And putting local ordinances in place don't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. What they do is deny responsibility to the community to manage this problem.
Well, so do we know how many sex offenders live in Wisconsin?
Well, we have a sex offender registry, those that have been, you know, prosecuted and convicted, and people can go on the website and find out if people are, you know, sex offenders are near in their community. The numbers are fairly large. I mean, again, if you have a broad definition, you would expect those numbers to be large. But in many cases, the largest single group of sex offending people are individuals who were very young and were having sex as teenagers, and then they were, in some cases, prosecuted and then labeled as lifetime sex offenders. That is problematic. And if you recall about, many years ago, yeah, 15, 20 years ago, there was an issue in Wisconsin where people came light to this and said, oh, my God, we can't be, you know, labeling these people for life. But to my knowledge, not much has been done to sort of move that stigma and that definition off certain types of individuals, but that's part of the problem here.
Yeah, I remember that debate, and I guess I thought that some changes were made, but apparently not. You're still labeled a sex offender, and you have to register if you were a 19-year-old having sex with a minor girlfriend, 17-year-old girlfriend.
Yes, and in fact, since it's the single largest category of sex offender, we need to look at it. Mm-hmm. Is that the best response that we can put forward? And you know, there has been some movement in some states, but in a lot of communities across this country, not just Wisconsin, this issue, the strategy has been avoidance. Let's avoid this problem.
Can we, putting that group aside, the boyfriend-girlfriend thing, do we know what percentage of sex offenders re-offend?
Yeah, well, we do have some research on that. In fact, the research suggests that sex offenders, by classification, by subpopulation, have differential rates of recidivism. So we have to look, again, as the email suggested a few moments ago, let's look at those different types of offenders. Some offenders don't reoffend, and the question is, what do you mean by reoffend? Do you mean another sex offense? Do you mean another criminal offense? What is the actual, what we call the dependent variable? What are we actually looking at? In many cases, their rates of recommission or reoffense are no higher than other rates. Now, you may suggest, those are still too high. Well, again, this is a management problem. We have to manage this situation, and we have to take the knowledge that we already know and institute that through our practices and our policies. And more often than not, we haven't made a lot of movement in that area.
We are talking about the problem that exists where local ordinances are making it difficult to find housing for sex offenders around Wisconsin. Patchwork of different ordinances, some communities trying to ban sex offenders from living there altogether. And when we come back, we'll talk about this, what some might consider an unlikely alliance with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett partnering up with Republican State Representative Joel Clayfish on a bill that would impose statewide standards. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Should there be a statewide standard that governs where sex offenders can live in Wisconsin? Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett has teamed up with Republican State Representative Joel Clayfish to draft such a bill that would impose statewide standards that would supersede local ordinances and would require that a sex offender be returned to the community where the crime was committed. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about this issue, the problem that is being experienced statewide because of a patchwork of local ordinances that make it difficult to place a sex offender in a community or for sex offenders to find housing in a community. And we will talk more with our guest, Dan Stojkovich, who is a dean and professor of criminal justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, about this proposal for statewide standards now. And we'll welcome any questions you might have or views on this issue at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Professor Stojkovich, the bill is still being drafted. There's no copy of it yet. But apparently it would be statewide standards, so that would overrule or supersede a local ordinance. Generally, do you think this is a good idea?
Yeah, this might be a good idea. A little bit of history on this. Back in 2004-05, I was asked by then Governor Doyle to chair a commission to find housing in the county of Milwaukee for sexually violent persons. And after, you know, about 9 months of deliberation and collecting evidence and doing some analysis, we realized that the local ordinances would move to this. And so we're talking over 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago, and we said there needs to be some consideration of the state moving in. So here it is 11 years later, and I think this discussion is a good discussion because what we've seen, is a number of state communities banning people or writing their local ordinances, again, not trying to manage this problem. Most of these people come from those communities anyway, so there's a whole issue about, you know, what happens to those people, and then the attendant consequences and fallout is significant. So we have a long history on this, and this may be a movement going forward. But once again, the devil's in the details, and so we want to see exactly what it says before we have any kind of clear commentary.
Yeah. Why would Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett be interested in statewide standards?
Well, I think what he wants to know is he doesn't want sex offenders, and like all mayors, I think they don't want sex offenders from other communities coming into their communities. And while that may be a concern, it may be an operational concern, where do they find housing? Do they find employment? Is treatment access available? Is there transportation? Again, the devil is in the details on this issue. And no community wants to be flooded with so-called sex offenders. The question really is one of management. What's the best way to manage these populations of people? How do we take responsibility? And if you have a state law or even a local ordinance that's fairly broad in its definition of sex offender, you'll be banning all sorts of people. And is that a good strategy? And the attendant consequences of the banning procedure, that's where there's other problems that arise. And there's some good evidence about that as well. So as you dig through the issue, you start to see, again, the devil, and you have to confront that devil in a reasonable way.
What about this return to sender component? Does that make sense?
That may make sense, particularly if the supports are in the community where the person's from. You know, family, work, and again, depending upon what type of sex offender we're actually talking about. What we do know is the strategy of alienation, the strategy of separation, of removal, doesn't make any sense. And the evidence is getting to be very, very clear across the country that that separation, that segregation actually makes the situation worse. And with some offenders, more likely to reoffend in the sex offending category. That obviously is nothing any community wants. So you have to take this issue head on, and you have to look at what the evidence suggests, and then you have to develop appropriate procedures going forward.
Yeah, one of the issues our reporter Gilman Halstead did a long story on this, which we did post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and one of the issues is that some smaller communities are concerned when, for example, a nearby community says, has really super strict zoning regulations or tries to ban sex offenders altogether from living in a community, that then that little nearby community is going to become the home of the sex offender. And they think that, so there's that concern as well.
Yes, and that's a legitimate concern. I mean, I can understand that. But again, I think the larger concern should be, how do we address this issue? What's the best way? Is simple banning, does that make sense? Oftentimes it makes no sense. And so we need to really be a little bit more analytical on this.
Right. Well, the statewide proposal, the statewide rule or law, if it becomes law, would supersede any ban or local ordinance. So is that a good idea?
Yeah, and I think that's a good first step. But again, I'd like to be able to flesh through the details of the bill before I make final commentary about it. But initially, on its surface, it does make some sense.
Yeah. We are talking with Stan Stojkovic, a dean and professor of criminal justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. One of his areas of expertise is the management of sex offenders in communities. And that's what we're talking about this hour. We're talking about a proposal that would set up a statewide standard that would regulate where sex offenders can live in Wisconsin. There'd be this uniform statewide standard, and there would be no more bans or different local ordinances. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This proposal would also contain a return to sender component where the offender would be returned to the community where the crime was committed. We have callers who are waiting with questions or thoughts on this. We have Steve in Rice Lake. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Professor, I was wondering what your comments would be on up here in the Northwoods. We have small communities, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, even like Eau Claire, 50,000 people. I've been to quite a few of these, torch and pitchfork meetings, where the offender is being brought back into the community. But my question, and I've had these questions before to the Department of Corrections, and you really get kind of the same answer, is, you got an offender that comes back into the community, and he's walking around in the grocery store and walks smack dab right back into his victim. He's being tracked with, a monitor or whatever, but, the previous victim's not being tracked. And, their answer is, well, we need to bring him back to the community where he's got family and work and all that. And it just seems to me like they don't take into account the re-victimization, especially, it's one thing to say if you're putting people back into Milwaukee or Madison where the communities are huge, but, you take a town even like Eau Claire, you got, like, four grocery stores. Your chance of running back into your victim on any given day are, not huge, but it can happen, and that's just something that doesn't seem to get addressed, and I was wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a legitimate question, I think, and I think the idea of how do we manage this offender, again, depending upon what type of sex offender are we talking about, it's the one that poses the greatest serious threat to us. the pedophile, for example, or the serial rapist, if those people are coming back to these small communities, and by the way, our evidence indicated in Wisconsin that those numbers were fairly small, but what it means to me is we can manage that problem. We can do something. So then it's incumbent upon social services, Department of Corrections, to put in a management plan that considers the re-victimization or the whole, you know, issue of being totally uncomfortable and clearly, depending upon the sex offending case, is serious. And so we need to look at that head on. So from a management perspective, since they're in the smaller communities, there tend not to be large numbers of serious sex offenders. There are some. But we can deal with that issue. So let's face it head on instead of being exclusionary, because the exclusionary role or the reaction tends to make the situation worse for everybody involved. So I'm not lost on that argument. I think the caller makes a very good point, and I think that's something that corrections and social services and local police can clearly address.
And just, I mean, out of curiosity, so they could put in a management plan that would say, hey, a violent sex offender who is being placed in Eau Claire, you cannot go to X grocery store because that's where your victim goes, something like that?
Well, I don't know if that would necessarily be the best strategy, but they can limit hours. They can limit the time. They can visit them more often. They can demand drug testing. They can demand mandatory treatment. They can do a number of things with that person. We found that the state's plan 10 years ago now, was actually, excuse me, quite good, and that we didn't have anybody reoffend, zero reoffend in the sex offending category. We had people who violated rules, administrative rules, in other words, rules of supervision, and we sent them right back to the institution. So in other words, this problem can be dealt with, particularly with the most problematic aspect or subpopulation of sex offending, those who pose the greatest risk to us and to our children.
Let's go next to Tara in Algoma. Good morning.
Hi. I pretty much wanted to say the same thing as what Stephen had just said. I myself am a victim, and the person that did it to me just got released out of prison in December, and I live in a very small community, and so I was very afraid of running into him again, but his parole officer did put, like, a block around my house, so he can't come within, like, a couple blocks of my house. But I'm still afraid, like, to go out, and I think the return to sender thing sucks.
Oh, I'm very sorry for your worry. So that's one restriction that could be placed, at least, is around the victim's house.
Yes, and you can, again, you can watch these people. You can demand that they be supervised more directly. And I understand there are limited resources, but in smaller communities, there tend not to be large numbers of seriously violent sex offenders. There are some there. You know, the reality is that they're going to come back eventually. How do we best manage them? I would rather watch them intensely than not do anything or to totally exclude them, because if we're going to have any chance of affecting their behavior in the future, they need to be included back into the community.
Well, there is a community near Madison that has been working on an ordinance that would prevent level 3 sex offenders from moving into Cottage Grove. So there are different levels. So we already have categorized the, you know, the teenager, you know, having with the high school friend, the something else, level 2 in violent sex offenders, pedophiles, the level 3?
Well, what they can do, and in fact, that strategy of just totally, you know, moving them out isn't supported by the evidence. Those are the people that you need to have back in. But you have to be able to monitor them and to supervise them in an appropriate way. And we can do that. We have shown in the state of Wisconsin for a 10-year period from 1994 to 2004, when we released a number of these people, well over 50, 55 of these people across the state of Wisconsin, that we had at that point a zero recidivism rate in that 10-year period, which is unheard of. That is absolutely unheard of. So it told me we can address this problem. And the commission that I sat on, I took that seriously and said, let's institute that for those that pose the greatest risk, which meant keep them close to us, let's watch them, let's supervise them. not take them away, not isolate them, because that tends to make the problem even worse. So there are ways to do this, and there is better evidence being collected every day about efficacious and effective treatment interventions with these populations.
Yeah, even if it is law, right now it's ordinance, but if there is a uniform state law, what can be done to help residents accept offenders moving near them or you know, back to the community?
The biggest public policy failure we've had in this area is education, is the ability to educate people about what do we really know. There has been an explosion of research about sex offenders, sex offender management over the last 20 years, largely in response to communities that have said, you know, we don't want them, and then the attendant consequences and problems that have occurred as a result of that approach. So my first response to people is, let's get more educated about the nature and extent of this problem, and then let's work together to solve that problem. Oftentimes what you find is that people are angry, they're worried about their property values, that's a legitimate concern. How do we best deal with this? This is a community problem, how do we best deal with it? Shunning people and removing them from the community totally, our evidence indicates it just doesn't make sense and has attendant collateral consequences that just don't work.
Yeah, just last month in Dane County, in the town of Cottage Grove, a town of Cottage Grove man was arrested for arson, for setting fire to a house as a part of a vigilante effort to keep a sex offender from moving there.
Yes, and in fact, we've seen that across the country. That's the type of collateral damage that hurts everybody. There's no good that comes out of that. And so we want to prevent that type of behavior. Instead of excluding people, we want to watch people, and we want those people to ultimately follow the restrictions that we have deemed to be the most appropriate. Department of Corrections, Department of Human Services, they know how to deal with this problem. Yes, they have resource issues, but they have a good understanding of this, and I think really educating people and facing fear is the best strategy here.
Jerry on Facebook says, I believe we treat offenders of any crimes cruelly. When someone does their time for a crime, we fail at the final steps of rehabilitation. What chance does the released person have of ever being accepted back into society, not to mention their likelihood of getting a job?
Well, that's a serious issue. And again, it's the attendant consequences. It's the people living under bridges. It's the people sex offending recurrence. It's the violence against individuals. All these things are fallout things from policies that just don't seem to make empirical sense. In other words, based in the evidence that we have. So I agree with the caller. It's a tough subject. It's a tough offending population. But we have to be able to manage this problem. And I think the state, by moving toward some type of state standard, may be a move in the right direction.
We are talking about a proposal that would set up a statewide standard for the placement of sex offenders in communities once they are released from prison. We are talking with Stan Stojkovich, who is a dean and professor of criminal justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, about this this proposal that would set up this statewide standard that would supersede local housing ordinances and would probably contain a return to sender component, where the offender would be returned to the community where the crime was committed. So do you think sex offenders should be returned to where they committed a crime? Do you think the state should have a standard and not allow a community to ban sex offenders from living there? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll take more of your calls. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Should there be a statewide standard that governs where sex offenders can live in Wisconsin? Some communities have different ordinances in place restricting where sex offenders can live. Some communities are trying to ban serious sex offenders from moving to their towns altogether. This is making it increasingly difficult for finding housing for sex offenders once they are released from prison. We are talking about a proposal from Republican State Representative Joel Clayfish that would impose statewide standards that would supersede local ordinances, that would also require that a sex offender be returned to the community where the crime was committed. This idea, we don't have all the details yet, has the backing of Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. And we are wondering if this is a good idea or not, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest, Stan Stojkovich, Dean and Professor of Criminal Justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, says that he sees some benefit in a statewide standard and some benefit to a return to sender component. But Professor Stojkovich, I know we haven't seen this bill as it is still being drafted. But I mean, generally, what would make this a decent bill? What should it contain?
Well, what it should contain is that the communities from which these offenders come have a responsibility to deal with those offenders, assuming, again, that they've had some type of correctional intervention and now they're coming back to the community. What's our responsibility? But this is the general responsibility for all criminal offenders. When offenders come back into the community, what is our responsibility as a community to those offenders, and what is their responsibility in terms of following, obviously, the law, following the conditions of their release, attending treatment, doing the types of things that we think will ultimately get them back into the community and back into the community in the right way. When you have communities writing local ordinances that exclude people, then you start winding up with little enclaves, enclaves in some cases under bridges, places where people can't stay. Individuals become much more problematic in terms of their control. In some cases, reoffending is more likely in the sex offender category. Other issues start to occur. You have to be able to deal with this, and having local communities integrate them where there are greater resources, particularly familial resources, this is very, very important going forward. So initially, my thought is that this may be a good idea. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. At the same time, Representative Clayfish is drafting these statewide standards. He also said the housing difficulties of offenders are not the public's problem. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I disagree with that, because they are the public's problem. These people are part of the community, albeit, people who are hated, who are despised because of their behavior. It's their behavior that we don't like, and we feel threatened, and we feel that they may pose a greater risk to us. That's why we have to assess them. We have to supervise them. But, you know, housing is an issue in a local community, and we do have to develop appropriate approaches, or we're going to get what we got right now. And we've had for the last 10, 11 years, which is, you know, again, enclaves of sex offenders and no clear housing. The State Department of Corrections is not able to supervise them, find places for them. That's problematic for everyone. My philosophy and my belief about this is watching people, particularly those who are the most serious, watching them, having interaction with them on a daily basis is the best way to prevent reoffending. Out of sight, out of mind is just a bad strategy.
John in Eau Claire is with us now. Hello, John.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Stan. Thank you for bringing up this issue today. I just had a quick question about, I heard a little bit about the tiers, but I wanted to get a little bit further into that. You know, today with everybody using the Internet, there's a lot more Internet crimes where they're not hands-on at all. And those victims, they're still victims on the Internet there, but I heard that people are saying that they might run into them at the grocery store. Is there going to be anything set in the law that distinguish between, hey, this person is a hands-on victim versus somebody that's done some virtual things where they've looked at some videos or they've looked at pictures? Because the people like that, they don't seem as much, I guess I would say, a threat to another person.
Right. So should that, and I'm sorry to jump in, John, but should that Stan Stojkovic be considered in drafting such a law?
Well, clearly the Internet has changed the way we understand our interactions with people, and it's going to be a consideration. And we do have restrictions on certain types of offenders about their access, particularly if they're accessing child pornography, for example. Those are appropriate things that we should do. Revictimization, the larger issue, can occur in a lot of different ways. And that's the problem here. It's not so simple. It's very complex. So I always say to people, we have to take this on a case-by-case approach, look for general trends, and then make the appropriate policy decisions based on the evidence that we have. So we have ways to restrict people's access to the Internet if they're victimizing people via the Internet. And if they violate those restrictions, we can do something about them. But clearly, it's a qualitative difference between that and going in a grocery store and seeing the victim again. So, but we have to take all that into consideration, I think, when we make decisions.
Thanks, John. Dennis in Appleton. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I'm just wondering, if someone travels from one city to another and commits a sex crime, when he is released, does he go to the city where this sex crime was committed or back to his original community? Because if that's the case, I don't see how the community where the crime was committed is responsible for it.
Well, it is, again, the devil's in the details. We don't know the particulars of the language. It's typically the court that has sentenced the person. So let's say the person is from community X but goes and commits the crime in community Y. Where were they arrested and ultimately prosecuted? Now, those two communities may be very close, maybe within the same county, obviously, and so it depends on the sentencing authority. I would assume they're going to be looking at that in their language when they draft this bill.
Let's go to Joe in Eagle River. Hello, Joe.
Morning, Joy and Stan. Two issues that I've not heard discussed yet, but that are big issues for us, because we had a level 3 offender placed in our community, and I'm on a town board in that small community. And one of the things that happened is that the fellow was placed in a home that's less than a block away from another family that has two small girls in it. And those kids have to walk down that road and by that house to get to the school bus every day. The other issue is that there are a number of homes in that neighborhood that have been for sale, and you can't give them away. What that's done to property values and fear in that neighborhood is just unimaginable. And I understand that these people, they have to go somewhere, and we let them out of the institutions because it costs too much to keep them in there. But I sure hope you take into account. I wonder if this Representative Clayfish would want one of these fellows placed in a home next door to his house.
You know, this is a legitimate concern. Property values were expressed to us when I served on the commission 10 years ago as a serious consideration, and I agree with that. I say, listen, there has to be a way for us to deal with this issue. In some communities across the country, the state actually will purchase homes. I'm not sure the state is willing to do that here, but in some areas, because of the property value issue. But the question really becomes, can we engage this person back in the community in an appropriate way that protects us, but also encourages, listen, we don't need this behavior anymore. How do we change the behavior? It's what we have to go for. There's no easy answers to these questions, and these are tough issues, and the question is, what do we really know about these issues that allow us to make better decisions that protect everybody in the process?
So what counsel do you have for state legislators as they presumably will be dealing with this issue?
My sense is that look at what we do know about effective intervention. Look at what we do know about residency requirements. Look at what we do know about supervision. There's a lot of research being done on this, and there are good ways to pass laws and bad ways. And I don't know what Representative Clayfish's motivation is on this. It's too early to tell. But I do think they need to really enlist the evidence that we have available to make better decisions.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Stan Stojkovic, we wanted to get your thoughts as a criminologist, a sociologist, on what happened in Madison on Friday. Your reaction to to the shooting, the police officer involved shooting in Madison of an unarmed 19-year-old biracial man?
Well, it's obviously a tragedy. I mean, this thing is a tragedy for all people involved. The police department, obviously the victim's family, the community. The question really is, do we have a process in place that allows us to appropriately investigate? We give police a lot of broad power, and obviously deadly force is one of those actions. And when we utilize that deadly force, have we done it appropriately? And these rises to issues of training, is there appropriate training? But also the one that tends to get glossed over in a lot of these cases is supervision. What's happening in terms of police supervision? Where are the frontline supervisors? What's going on between them and the officers? Training is very important when these kinds of things. They're always going to be called into question. What kind of training did you get? Clearly that's going to happen here. But let's see what the investigation reveals before we make any kind of judgment. But oftentimes in these cases what we find is either poor training or limited supervision or a practice or a policy that just doesn't seem to make sense, given what we know about effective supervision and effective training. So we'll have to wait and see what happens here, and then we can make some judgment.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
Have a great day.
Stan Stojkovich, Dean and Professor of Criminal Justice at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee. Thanks to Caleb Lato for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we are going to talk with an author who says the war on drugs hasn't helped solve drug addiction. We'll talk about the roots of drug addiction as well tomorrow at this time. Stay with us coming up in our next hour. It's our big question, and we'll give you an opportunity to talk about the letter that was signed by 47 U.S. senators, including Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, that was sent to the leadership of Iran about the negotiations going on for a nuclear deal. Were those senators patriots or traitors? We'll ask you that and our guest in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.